Sullivan, BRIANSULLIVAN. I am the co-host of the CNBC program Power Lunch from 1 to 3 p.m. Eastern Time, Monday through Friday. I've just returned from my third trip to the Bakken up in Williston, North Dakota, Tioga, Ray, North Dakota, to dig further into the oil and energy story.
So let's talk about your first trip out there, if you wouldn't mind. I mean, if you want to start by with the most recent information, that's fine. But just for a little context, I guess I was kind of wondering about your first trip out to North Dakota.
First trip to North Dakota was October of 2013 when things were really heating up, and we wanted to go see how Williston, sort of the Bakken region, was dealing with the boom. I've been through this business enough to have seen some booms, like the internet boom. I've been doing this now for, sadly, over, I guess, 20, this is my 20th year in financial journalism. And so I wanted to see how they dealt with the boom, and we met some key players and spoke with some locals, and it was just a classic growth story of things can't, you know, we can't find enough of this, we can't find enough of that. I'll never forget one of the cool anecdotes is that I stayed in this hotel, and you'll forgive me, I can't remember the name of it. It's now a Ramada. I think it was sold. It was on a dirt road because the hotel developer, wanted to put the thing up, but, you know, the town is slower to put the roads down because there's so much growth. But, you know, you have this rental car, you're sort of driving on this dirt driveway, you know, to a brand new hotel, and the hotel was nice, but it was also, I think, $400 a night, you know, and I was just sort of, I was shocked by just not only the level of growth, but just the level of cost. I mean, how much everything cost. It was just shocking to me. So we were up there for 2 days, whatever we were, and came back, and then we returned in December of 2014.
And 2014, that was 2 years ago, so oil prices were probably around that $60 range, if my memory serves me right. The bottom hadn't fallen out at that point yet, but the beginning had started. You started hearing oil companies talking about changing their operations in 2015. I can recall Lynn Helms, director for the North Dakota Mineral Resources, start to give that kind of ominous warning during the annual meetings in October of 2013, I want to say, or 14. When you went back out there December 2014, what was the activity like then? Was it still dirt roads at $400 a night Ramadas, or had it changed a little bit?
Yeah, no, it wasn't a Ramada. I can't remember what the name of it was. Listen, you're right. I mean, the price of oil had come down dramatically, very quickly, starting in October. So that's why we wanted to go. What's going to happen here? Listen, it's not a complicated story. Globally or in North Dakota, it doesn't matter where you are. Just look at the production numbers versus demand numbers, and you see that the world has too much oil. I mean, hard to believe we came from peak oil a few decades ago to now too much oil. But we went there to kind of see where the follow-up was. Things were still humming along because price of oil had only been down for a couple of months. And everybody was fully committed. Contracts were in. Drilling activity was high. We sat down, had dinner with a bunch of locals and various businesses. And, you know, they were all, of course, very optimistic. You know, as you would imagine that entrepreneurs are going to be. I mean, to be an entrepreneur, I think you have to be an optimistic person. But it was also sort of a sense of, I mean, it's just respect because we met the nice people up there. Everyone's kind of like, we're going to be fine. Everything's fine. It's going to recover. Oil bounce back. I wasn't quite so sure. I mean, you know, I'm just a journalist, but you look at the numbers and you're thinking that's a lot of gap there to make up in terms of oversupply. Things are still expensive. Hotel was still in the $300 range. Restaurants, there's a couple nice places there. We've been to this place called the Williston Brewing Company, kind of a nice restaurant in town, all three times. I met the owner, had him on the show, and he's a very successful entrepreneur, by the way, in Minneapolis and other places. But you know, we went there and the menus were expensive and the restaurants were crowded and they were still humming along because the price had just come down, and there was a great expectation that it was going to recover very quickly. I also do remember that it was negative 20. I've never been so cold in my life. I grew up in Southern California. It was negative 20, and obviously it hasn't happened, and so we paid a visit to them last week to kind of figure out, you know, the third stage.
Okay, so last week you went back to the Bakken, and you Okay, so let's same question. Now you're back to the Bakken. Dirt roads, $300, $400 a night Ramadas. What was the new normal? Because I'm actually doing a story. Hang on 1 second. I'm sorry, one second here. I'm actually doing a story called The New Normal is what we're calling it right now, talking about some of these new communities. So I guess, yeah, I mean, what was the new normal? 129, you were saying?
Yeah, I paid $129 a night for the hotel that was in the 300s the last time I was there. Here's the weird irony is that, and this isn't even me saying this, this is the restaurant owner from the Wilson Brewing Company and others who live there, which is the last two times I was there, there wasn't enough of anything. There wasn't enough hotel rooms. There wasn't enough restaurants. There wasn't enough cranes for the oil rigs. Wasn't enough anything. Now there's suddenly too much of everything. And there's too many hotel rooms. There's too many restaurants. There's something like 33 restaurants now in Williston, North Dakota. That's what this restaurant owner was telling us, Marcus Junt's name, J-U-N-D-T. And there's, you know, and new hotels opening up. So there's a glut of rooms. There's a glut of hotels. We met a guy the first time we were there, a really nice guy named Andy Noss, N-J-O-S, who owns Dakota West Crane Company. And they started with one crane, him and his cousin, and they went down to Houston and drove this crane back. Took them like a week and a half to drive this crane. I mean, when I say a crane, you know, I'm talking about these giant cranes, you know, with like, you know, 20 tires and stuff like this. They go 50 miles an hour max. And they got up to 9 cranes. And in fact, he went out to Columbia, South Carolina, and drove a crane back 45 miles an hour from Columbia, South Carolina to Williston. It took him 16 days. 16 days, because he had to stop and get permitted, and the thing was slow, and there was a gas problem. And now he's down to 4. So he went from 1 to 9 to 4 in the course of 3 years. And, you know, and he's had to lay people off, and they're a small business, and a family business. They're struggling to sort of, you know, keep things going. So we went from not enough of anything to too much of everything. And here's the sad reality of that type of world. If everybody, Jason, is half full, they're all doomed. So what's going to have to happen is either we're going to see a recovery, and we're going to see the rooms get filled back up and the restaurants get filled back up and the apartments get filled back up, or there's going to be a lot of closing stuff down because you need to have businesses 75% full to really stay in business. I don't care what you are, right?
You know, you bring up a very interesting point. I was just talking with a real estate commercial broker out of Minneapolis yesterday, and he represents a number of firms out in the Bakken. And what he was talking about was the drop in rents from 3,000 down to 1,000 to 1,500. But not only do you have a drop in rents, but you have a drop in occupancy. So actually, your 75% projection is really more of a 25% projection. And that if you don't start to see some heads in the beds, you're going to start seeing some bankruptcies and possibly some some properties that are going to be for sale, because a lot of these people who own the buildings, they didn't intend to be landlords. Did you see anything along those lines or hear any of those numbers like I just said?
Yeah, well, listen, there's a gigantic private equity firm called Kohlberg, Kravis, and Roberts. I don't know if you've ever heard of them. They're colloquially referred to as KKR. They're one of the biggest, most established private equity firms of the world. The book and movie Barbarians at the Gate was about their takeover of Nabisco. I mean, they're a legend. You know, I mean, they've been around forever. They built a giant apartment community in Williston. I mean, for them to go to Williston, North Dakota, number one, says something, right? I mean, it's a firm that does $20 billion deals. They went to Williston, built a giant apartment community, and we went by it. You know, listen, again, anecdotally, so don't quote me on this. You know, you can dig in the numbers yourself. Anecdotally, it didn't look like there was many people there. And the guy we were with who lives there, who's a land developer, like, they're getting killed. And I think that they might have even left or sold off. You might want to just do some research into that on your own. But the point is, a giant New York private equity firm goes there and getting its real estate, you know what, handed to it. The other thing, too, is that if you've got everything sitting empty or partially empty, it's not good for crime. I mean, it's not good for anything, right? I mean, things start to look run down. Again, the city, the people up there are wonderful. We made some good friends. And Williston is going to be fine long term. I want to make that point clear. I mean, Williston will continue to go on. But they went through this huge building boom. And you're right. I mean, things have got to physically shut down. I mean, you can't have that many restaurants in a town like that. I mean, you can't have a half-full restaurant. Nobody will make it. Everyone will just kind of bleed along. So there's going to have to be either a recovery. And here's the other thing, too, and you would know more about this than I do. Gosh, I'm not an oil and gas guy, by the way. I'm just a TV anchor who likes oil and gas, and I've been covering it for a while, is that even if the price of oil recovers to $100 tomorrow, I mean, are they going to be able to get the people back? These people have left. They found other jobs, you know, or they didn't. And maybe they're less willing to come back to Williston because they got, you know, they've lost 15,000 people in the county in the course of a year. I mean, could they even get the rigs back up?
You know, actually, that's about a 12 to 16-month lag time. I did a story on that, and I asked that specific question, and it was, if oil prices went up to, say, $100 tomorrow, what would we look at for when the rigs would be back? And they said there would be about a 12 to 16-month time window, and that really resonated with me, because what you're saying is right, that some of these places, they got to take a look at their long-term projections here and to say, where are we at today? Because it might not be another year or year and a half until we actually can start seeing some projections that come near what the originals were. How much money do we want to continue to shovel in this, or do we want to cut our losses and move on? I wanted to ask you about some of the other shale plays as well. You're visiting some of these other shale plays. What are you seeing in comparison to the activity when it comes to the Bakken?
Well, the activity is down everywhere, but I will say this. The Permian Basin, is that what you're referring to, the other physical plays?
Yes.
Yeah, the Permian is probably doing the best of all of them. And again, everybody's hurting at this price point, but the Permian is the oldest play. I think the Texas operators kind of, some of them anyway, the Diamondback Energies, the Pioneer Natural Resources of the world, they saw it coming. They started cutting costs early. And, you know, they can be profitable. Some of these companies have told me they're profitable under $20 a barrel.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, not much, but they are. In other words, they can continue to grow and to, you know, not maybe to expand, but yet to survive without a problem. Eagle Ford is a little more difficult, you know, it comes up in price. And listen, you get these weird things like the Marcellus out of Pennsylvania and stuff. That's more like North Dakota, where it's newer, it's in more expensive land. And, you know, you probably need a $60 number. I mean, again, you would know more about this than I do, but if you talk to oil companies, as I have, I mean, first off, they're very reluctant to tell you, you know, where they're profitable. No, I'm going to say like it's $60.50. You know, that rarely happens, if ever. But, you know, what you hear from people up there is, I asked a guy working a rig, I mean, you know, and he's a manager of one of the 33 remaining drilling rigs up there. He said 65 is a nice number.
Hmm.
I pressed him on it. You know, 65 is a nice number. But around the country, yeah, 50, 40, you can make money in some places. But if you're a late bloomer to this game, no matter where you are, and you paid a lot of money for land and mineral rights and crews and didn't manage your balance sheet, well, you're in trouble. And I've said on my show that 40 is not much better than 30 for a lot of these companies. They're losing less money, but they're still losing money.
So looking at this from the big...
By the way, you had a big, sorry to interrupt, you had a big play today. The former $14 billion company called Lin Energy, L-I-N-N, $14 billion company 3 years ago, basically today came out and said, we don't know if we can continue to exist.
Wow.
Now, they use the term going concern. You probably know that's a business concern. We are questioning our ability to continue as a going concern. That's an accounting term, basically saying, not sure we can pay the bills. They deferred a debt payment. This was a $14 billion company 3 years ago, and that's why I got involved in this story. It's not just that I enjoy oil and gas, it's that the debt levels, the debt angle to the story is the one that has not been told or was really understood a couple of years ago. And that's why this is different than in previous booms and busts, because of the amount of debt that was taken on by companies and individuals. I mean, look at the state of North Dakota. They got a $1 billion budget shortfall. How is that possible? Did they save anything? No.
So one of the reasons I got interested in this story, which is known as the shale play, was because of the change, that something felt different, much like how you gravitated to it, because this play does seem different. And when I heard John Gibson, the former CEO of One Oak, tell me, who I've interviewed, and he told me that they're rewriting their business plan. So did Harold Hamm. James Volker from Whiting alluded to the same thing. When I started hearing these men of that caliber tell me they're rewriting their business plan, the first thing I thought of, in all honesty, was my industry, the media. I've been in the media now for 25 years, and when the internet came around, I had to literally rewrite my whole business plan multiple times because, you know, nobody would pay for it. And then how do you get them to pay for it? And yada, yada, yada. And then you started seeing the Los Angeles Times go out of business because, you know, after 100 years of being a successful company, the internet put them out of business. So to me, that's what the shale revolution kind of reminded me of, is this technology wave that is changing oil and gas to the tune to where the deepest pockets are going to win. And I don't know. I guess, do you got any comments on that, I guess?
Well, you know, I like the analogy, actually. I hadn't thought of it before, so I think it's pretty good. I guess the idea would be this. I mean, it's kind of like, to your point, media, now print or TV, it doesn't really matter. I mean, print ad rate can come down a lot more than I think broadcast, but the point is the same, is that the whole industry's changed, and I feel like with the oil producers, it's kind of like, well, it's just a matter of time before oil recovers and goes higher again. And it's kind of like us saying, well, it's just a matter of time before ad rates go higher again. What if they don't?
Right.
And that you have to operate your company like that. And if they do, great. If they don't, then you're prepared. But you can't assume prices are going to go high. You know, I think we have recency bias because oil's been above 100 a barrel twice in the last 5 or 6 years. If you go back 40 or 50 years in inflation adjust, the price of oil is like $40, $45. I mean, that's where oil wants to be. For the 90s, oil did nothing, right? I mean, and so for most of the 90s. And so it's entirely possible that just because oil has collapsed as much as it has, that it's not going to recover. It may not. What if it doesn't? And I think if you're running a company, you have to have, a budget and an operating plan that says, what if oil is at $40 to $45 for the next 5 years? How does XYZ Corporation get through that? And that's what you have to do. And the good news, I guess, is that people are going to learn to operate a lot smarter. And that, you know, if they can operate at 40 to 45, that if we see a turn, that until labor rates go back up, that they're going to be able to make some money and possibly grow. So, but if they don't, you darn well better be able to have your balance sheet in order. And if you took on a lot of debt and can't renegotiate your debt or issue new equity or whatever it is, you're in trouble. That's why I said 40 is not much better than 30 for some companies.
How are you doing on time? You got time for one or two more?
Yeah. Sure.
Okay. I wanted to ask you about the reverse ripple. I did a story called The Bakken Ripple and explained how, you know, Miles City and Billings and Rapid City and Minneapolis were really early successors because of the distribution arteries that were set up, and just some of the, you know, 3M out of Minneapolis made everything just so natural for the Bakken. They were an early victor in the success of the Bakken. Now there's a reverse ripple that's coming through. When it comes to the jobs that have been created, now the jobs that are being eliminated because of this volatility of price. Okay, that's kind of the context behind it. So what do you see, or do you have any comments when it comes to the reverse ripple that oil and gas provides the job market or the American economy?
Well, okay, so I've been very vocal in saying about a year and a half ago, I came out and tweeted and said that I thought that oil's drop of this magnitude was bad for the economy, and people basically were saying I was an idiot because, you know, that's low gas prices, and low gas prices are good. Yes, low gas prices are good, but when you look at all the jobs that have been created in this industry over the last 5 or 6 years, keep in mind, this was the only industry adding jobs during the financial crisis. If you had a high school diploma and wanted a job and you were willing to bust your butt and freeze it off as well, you got in a car and went to Williston from wherever you were, you could make a good living if you worked hard for it. And during the financial crisis, this was the industry that was growing. We're talking tens or hundreds of thousands of good jobs. And that's why I've said that I don't think that it's a positive for America. Just because we have cheap gas, people aren't going to buy a home because gas is cheap, right? They may change the car they're driving and drive more miles and maybe order an extra dessert at work. I'm not saying it doesn't matter. It does. But the hundreds of thousands of jobs that are going to be either lost or have their pay slashed does have a negative effect as well. If you look at the national data, Texas and North Dakota had an outsized impact on the data in America. And you say, oh, things, and that's important psychologically, right? And if you look, so the reverse ripple to your effect is this. If you look at the data now, okay, like we had retail sales data, but if you dug into it, you saw that gas stations were the only one that really that was down big. And that's because it's based on dollars, and if gas is cheap, they bring in fewer dollars on an absolute basis. So it's now when you look at the monthly jobs numbers, what's the only industry that's losing jobs? Mining, which, by the way, is that U.S. government puts oil and gas under mining. So it's not going to bring America down. That's not what I'm saying. But it does make the data look weaker, and the data does reinforce psychology. So if we've got this thing sort of, it's like if you had A, B, and then a D on your, you know, your grade point average is going to come down, even though you're really an A and B student. You might have a C average all of a sudden, and that's kind of what oil and gas is doing right now, dragging things down, making things not look as good, and it matters a lot.
You mentioned about the some of the efficiencies in technology earlier, bringing some of the costs down and that sort of thing. I wanted to ask you, are you seeing any new companies emerging?
Wow, that's a good question. I can't think of one off the top of my head. I'm sure there's a lot of seismic-type testing companies that matter a lot, you know, that are coming out of the, you know. To your point, the technology has gotten so doggone good, it's like fishing. You know you're going to catch a fish, though. Every time you put the hook in, it's just how big the fish is going to be and how hard it's going to be to reel it in, but there's no empty hooks. There's no dry holes anymore. I'm sure there's some seismic companies and doing all kinds of computer-aided testing. I haven't seen them. I've got about 150 stock on this, this stock screener I built. I track in real time using a program called FactSet. And there's some names that, you know, you look at and you're like, what do they do? I probably should dig in a little more, but it's pretty ugly, by the way. Over the last year, almost all of those 150 company stocks are down pretty big. I mean, you look at Houston. I went down to Houston. I ran a stock screener. There's like 214 publicly traded companies in the Houston area, and 168 of them were oil and gas related. You know, like Houston is a huge city and it's diversified, but oil and gas is still the blood that pumps through its veins, right? And I think we're going to see this not just a Williston story. I think it will. If oil stays low for a year or two, you're going to start to see it. That those ripples you talked about, housing, trucking, rail, pipes, all the pipe manufacturers. According to the American Petroleum Institute, there's 300,000 companies that are directly or indirectly involved or benefiting from the oil and gas industry.